This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. With ingredients made out of common additives in food and personal care products, how dangerous exactly is vaping? And to whom does it really pose this danger? Why are the authorities hot on the trail of vaping industry when research shows vaping is up to 95% safer compared to traditional tobacco smoking? But will the country's thriving vape industry go up in smoke? So many questions cloud the hottest issue in the country. We have in the studio with us Dato Dr. Abdul Muttalif, who is a chest physician at the Institute of Respiratory Medicine, Ministry of Health, Malaysia, as well as an advisor and chairman for the e-cigarette and Shisha Ministry of Health, together with Dr. Helmi Haji Maidin, a respiratory consultant, Malaysian Thoracic Society Council Rep for Tobacco Control. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Thank you. You can tell
I struggled through your designations. Gentlemen, why do you think there has been so much publicity of late in relation to vaping?
Okay, thank you, Mina, for inviting me. I think it's a good thing that we're making also noise in the air and also in lots of media to educate people about vaping. We know that it's getting a bit more trendy in Malaysia for the past few years. And we're worrying that a lot of youngsters are taking these new habits. And the biggest worry, Meera, is that there's nicotine in vaping. Okay. Some of them claim there's no nicotine there. Yes, maybe no. But the nicotine is the worrying part in the vaping. That's what the Ministry of Health is really worried about. KKM is for the health of the public and for the health of people in Malaysia. We don't want the Malaysians to be addicted to a new kind of device and be the same trend as cigarette, which was many, many years ago. As you know, very well, cigarette was an addictive thing, and they always start as a playful thing for youngsters. Like they go with their friend, they got a mature feeling, they got all these nice things as a group kind of practice, and then they become hooked to this nicotine, and they can't take it off at all. If you look at all the drugs for addiction, like heroin, marijuana, ganja, and all those things, you wouldn't believe, Meera, nicotine is the highest addiction.
And the reason it is still around and not a problem is because it's socially acceptable.
Exactly. And the thing is, we already sort of gone over the board and said we cannot control them from the beginning itself. So we don't want to repeat history again. This is something new. And we know it's going to be like cigarette in the future. Although they may help some people who are smoking, yes and no, but the trouble is that we worry that there are lots of bad compared to good. They need some more than the bad ones. So that's the biggest worry we actually face right now.
Dr. Helmi, your thoughts? Yeah.
I echo Dr. Razak's thoughts in that the main worry is really about the youth. There's a whole separate conversation about the efficacy and the safety of the actual device with regards to smoking cessation, which I'm sure we'll come into. But with regards to youth, we have a new device that kids are becoming more and more interested in, that they are basically using as a gateway to a form of addiction. As Dr. Razak pointed out, nicotine is one of the most addictive substances known to man, far more than heroin, ganja. And if we are concerned about addiction to those hardcore drugs, then really we should be concerned about addiction to nicotine as well. There are increasing studies. Mind you, this is a new technology. It's a developing, evolving field. But there are studies showing that there are increasing numbers of youth in the United States, which is at the moment the largest market for e-cigarettes, who are using e-cigarettes. And similarly, those who are using e-cigarettes are more likely to use conventional cigarettes. So it's acting as a gateway from one form of addiction to another, as opposed to a tool to help people quit smoking.
Okay. And when you say you are concerned with the younger generation, then, and if you say smoking, you know, nicotine has that addictive ability, why then the question is, why is it that, you know, we haven't banned cigarettes?
Okay. Good question. They always ask me the same thing. The thing is very interesting, Meera. When the Akta Rachun came in the KKM, the Akta Rachun is a Poison Act, came in 1952. Very interestingly, even those days, there may be some political influence, I'm not so sure, or some gain over there. They were saying that the Poison Act actually is for everything that contains nicotine except cigarette. So cigarette was an exemption those days. So cigarette was allowed to be sold even though they have nicotine. So the thing is, if you ask me, there were not much news about the cigarette and the danger until 1960s. Only in 1960s, when the Surgeon General of USA said that there are more cancers, more lung diseases due to smoking then they got worried. And then you can see in USA, the smoking came down dramatically from the 1960s to the 1990s. It came down by about 30%. From 45% smokers in USA, is now only 18% smokers in USA. But we Asians are going up. So it's a worrying trend. So if you ask me, the ACTA poison actually was a good thing and a bad thing in the sense that there was no strict control for cigarette those days. But we are looking to the ACTA again now to revise it.
Were we complacent in a way? Because we also have this problem of shisha, which we didn't know very much about.
Exactly.
Vaping, we still don't know very much about. But have we been complacent?
No, the thing is, shisha is easy. Shisha actually contains tobacco. So whatever the act for tobacco act in the food, there's another act called food makanan, you know. There's what's called the ACTA Racun Makanan, 1984. Those days also come into food and tobacco use. So shisha was straightforward, is tobacco. So there's no issue about shisha. But there was nothing mentioned about e-cigarette in the ACTA. It's something very new. So we were caught offhand. Mm-hmm. You know? And now we are trying to rectify the ACTA to put something else in the e-cigarette into this ACTA. And that will take a long process. We already wasted about 2 years right now, Mamira. We don't want to wait another 2 or 3 years to get the ACTA to be done in the parliament. And then you see more people vaping in the country, which cannot be controlled again. Even now, they're saying that 1 million people in the country, the business being lost, isn't there? They already invested money for all these things. And they're making lots of noise. And I'm very sure in the next 1 or 2 years, we'll be getting 2-3 million people using vaping.
Yep. So statistics at the moment is standing at about, what, 1 million?
1 million, yes. If I showed just now to you, Mira, from about 200,000 in January, April, it's gone to 1 million right now, within a year. And that's frightening. It really is frightening. The total smokers in Malaysia is only about 4 to 5 million smokers. Smokers by the cigarette. But now, within a year, we got 1 million vapers. We don't know how many of them were smokers before. And how many of us are new guys that people are taking out vaping right now. So that's the biggest worry right now. At least about 30-20% will be new kind of smokers. Not cigarette smokers before, but new vapers right now. And they're getting into the nicotine slowly and surely, you know?
Dr. Helmy, considering we don't know very much about what goes into the liquid as far as vaping is concerned, so how then is cigarette smoking different from vaping?
In terms of the content, you mean?
Yeah.
Right, in terms of the content, the advocates for electronic cigarettes will say that it is a safer device and that the chemicals in it are different, and as a result, it is something that we can use as a smoking cessation tool. That, in theory, is correct in the sense that we know for a fact that we have about 4,000 odd chemicals that are carcinogenic. It's taken, as Dr. Razak pointed out, decades to come to a firm conclusion that there's a link between smoking cigarettes and certain health effects. However, similarly, because it's so new, we don't really know the long-term consequences of the stuff that's inside the juice of electronic cigarettes. So if you hear the media, they always say there are four things generally. There are flavorings, there are nicotine, there's glycerol, there's propylene glycol, and they say how safe this is. But it's actually a slight degree of misdirection. For example, they say the flavorings are safe because it's FDA approved. So in the United States, it's safe. But actually, it's approved for consumption, for ingestion. You're actually allowed to eat it. But eating something doesn't mean it's safe to inhale it. You know, if you take curry powder, for example, you can swallow it. It doesn't mean you should inhale it. Mm-hmm. And similarly, these products do have effects on your lungs. The problem at the moment from a scientific data point of view is that because it's new, a lot of the data comes from lab-based studies. So we don't have proper clinical trials looking at the health effects yet. That might take years to come. But in the lab, we know, for example, that exposure to electronic cigarette fumes, and to be fair, it's not actually even fumes, it's aerosol. So as an aside, there's always this assumption that this is vapor, therefore it's safe. It's not vapor, it's actually aerosol, which means it contains fine particulates within the, the suspension. And as a result, we know that they have effects on cells. Going back to what I was trying to point out earlier on, we know from lab studies that human stem cells, for example, showed signs of toxicity. And there are concerns that this may mean that we have issues where women who are pregnant, for example, or children who are developing will have impairment of their lung function. So lots of lab-based studies, but nothing clinical just yet. just purely because it's such a new technology.
Okay, and hence it makes it more difficult for you. Some would argue, the vapers would argue, that it is their right. It is a human right, that they have the right to vape if they want to. How would you argue with that?
Okay, so if they have the right to vape, I think it's good. But probably when they fall sick, who's going to treat them? We, the Kementerian Kesehatan. And the money we spend to treat people with lung disease in the country, Mira, is tremendous. There was a study done by Dr. Al-Junid about a few years ago. And for treating heart disease, lung disease, and cancers due to smoking, the government spent about 3 billion ringgit. And who pays for it? The smokers? No. The government pays for it, and we are paying for it through the income tax. So if they think it's their right, I think it's actually wrong. It's our right to protect them, if you ask me, as a doctor and as a healthcare workers, to educate them, saying that they will get disease ultimately. Not all, but about 50% will get a disease. But they will actually end up with lots of problems. And it becomes our problem in the future. So if we say that it's their right, I think it's wrong, if you ask me, Mira. You know? If they are right, they can actually do what they want without disturbing other people in the community, then it's okay. But when they fall sick, they will actually be increasing our demand for treating them. Their family will suffer indirectly for taking on the ill patients. There's a direct cause and indirect cause. So this is the thing we don't see right now, but we'll see 10 years down the line.
There's talk about pharmacies taking over the sale of vape products. How do you feel about that?
The thing is, Ministry of Health actually was pushed to a corner, if you ask me. We wanted to ban it. So I'm going to tell you that right now. I was the chairman for the e-cigarette and CHR in the Ministry of Health. And we went through lots of evidence and papers all over the years. And I must tell you, Mira, we took about 2 years to go through all these papers because it's something very new. So we wanted people to get the correct idea. And over the past 2 years, we got lots of data coming in for this e-cigarette. And it's not really encouraging us to say you can actually regulate them. We find that more things show that this is going to be worse for the people in the future. And we got to do something about it. And my committee, not me alone, my committee in the Kementerian Kesehatan, we came with a recommendation to the Minister of Health that you should ban it. And therefore, we proposed to Dato' Sri Subramaniam to ban it. But then the cabinet came with the other thing, not to ban. So we were actually stuck in between.
A lot of us found that mind-boggling.
Exactly.
We will come back and find out up next.
What was
the rationale behind Cabinet approving this on the bigger picture, BFM 89.9? Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. We're discussing vaping. It's, hit the headlines all over Malaysia. We're trying to get our head around what's happening in the country. We have people on different sides of the divide. Where are we going with all of this? That's with Dr. Abdul Razak Abdul Muttalif, who's a chest physician at the Institute of Respiratory Medicine, Ministry of Health. He's also advisor and chairman for the e-cigarette and shisha at the Ministry of Health. And Dr. Helmi Haji Maidin, who's a respiratory consultant, Malaysian Thoracic Society Council Rep for Tobacco Control. And, you know, when you talk about cabinets, you know, taking a different stand from the Ministry of Health, why did that happen?
I suppose the cabinets have got their own reasons why they're doing it. They may be looking into other sort of gains and other sort of problems that the people are going to face, I think so. And like what they correctly pointed out, that there were some people affected by this ban. There are some guys doing it as for money and also as business thing. And they claim they have invested money in this new business.
Of course, we have more than 1,000 retailers now,
I think. Yeah, correct, too. So the thing is, it does affect them indirectly. So that may be the concern. That may be the concern. So the financial part is one of the main concerns for the cabinet not to ban it at the moment. But if you ask me, Mira, the short-term gain is long-term loss, if you ask me. You're looking short-term gain for some people who are selling this vape. And I always feel that selling a vape to a person and getting money out of it is a thing to make the person to get into trouble in the future.
Mm-hmm. But then there's this perception that it is a safer alternative.
Yeah, I think Dr. Hilmi just mentioned to you, it is safer, yes, but not 100% safe. The contents in the e-cigarette do harm the person short-term, long-term. So the harm is there for sure. But if you ask me, for smokers, for them to cut down smoking, there may be a role. But the trouble, Mira, is that these smokers, when they take to vaping, they will not stop vaping. Mm-hmm. Some may do, yes, but some go on vaping forever. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest worry.
Mm-hmm. How bad is nicotine, Dr. Helmi? And how much nicotine do you need to consume to harm or kill somebody?
There's actually two different elements to that question, in the sense that you can talk about inhalation and you can talk about consumption as well. So one of the things that you may have seen in the media is about children, for example, getting hold of liquid nicotine, poisoning themselves, episodes of death across the world where we have situations where there's accidental consumption. In fact, in the UK, about a few days ago, there was a story of a guy who committed suicide by consuming liquid nicotine. There isn't a hard and fast rule as to the actual amount. Generally speaking, it's between 20 and 30 milligrams. But that depends also on the individual, so you know how you consume things and or how you metabolize things. And in children, it is as low as 2 milligrams. That is very worrying. And the other worrying thing is there was a study in, I can't actually remember how many years ago, but within the last 2 years, which showed that there was an 89% discrepancy in 35 different e-juices with regards to what's stated on the label and the actual content. So it may say it contains X amount of milligrams, but when the authorities actually checked it, it was totally different. And that's worrying because you buy something with the assumption that you can trust the product, but you actually get a product that's more poisonous or even less effective. Mm-hmm. So that's one other issue that we have with regards to the current market, the current scenario for electronic cigarettes. There isn't any quality control. We don't really know what's out there.
Dr. Raza, why ban when you can regulate?
Okay. Why ban when you can regulate? Okay. Regulation will be similar to cigarette again. We have already lost our battle against cigarette. We want to regulate cigarette and put lots of places for no smoking and everything. And it's not working. People are still smoking. You can see people selling cigarette on the counter. You can see people smoking areas. And regulation is already there. And to regulate sort of an activity, you need lots of manpower. That's the biggest thing. So if you ask me, commitment by everyone and also by manpower to enforce all this regulation is not a big issue for these things. And we know from the cigarette kind of problem we actually faced, we don't want to face the same thing in the future for e-cigarette. So regulation may be a big issue to actually come to a term in the future.
The person missing in this discussion today are the pro-vapers. So we spoke separately to the president of the Malaysian Organisation of Vape Entity, better known as MOVE. Yeah. We spoke to Samsul Kamal Arifin, and this is what he had to say.
It might seem very strange that at first the MOH have said that they are going to have a blanket ban on vape, but then within 48 hours it was actually announced by the cabinet that they are not going to ban vape. But 24 hours after, there were raids all over the country at the level of efficiency not seen before by any government agency. So then again, people are beginning to ask the exact question that you just asked me. What's going on? Seems to be an agenda going on here, because it's very unconventional for the ministry to go against the ruling of the government to conduct such raids.
Your thoughts, Dr. Raza.
Okay. Very interesting.
You're in a tight spot.
Well, I am definitely. You are naughty putting me in a tight spot, Yamira. Okay, I think he is a vapor. So he wants to say his point of view. I think I fully agree with him. Yeah. Because they got their own sort of their own interests, and so they got their own rights, if you ask me. Like what you say, their own rights. Okay, why the turnover 24 hours? Okay, like what I said to you, I recommend to the minister to ban it. My committee, not I, my committee. And then the minister said, good, you want to ban it. But then again, the cabinet didn't want to ban because of their own interest. And they don't want to ban it. They want to regulate these things. So then again, the ministry came with a regulation saying that since you can't ban it, you want to regulate these things, then the ACTA Poison C for nicotine should come into play. And using this ACTA Poison C in 1952, anything that contains nicotine should be sold by somebody licensed to sell them and not by anybody else. And the person licensed to sell them is a pharmacist or a doctor. This is regulation. This is regulation. Mm-hmm. And when he say that we actually go and what they call ransack the whole shop and take all those things, I think it's wrong in the sense that we actually took only samples. If any of those things contain nicotine, we took them and to verify them and send to the lab to see if the nicotine is there or not. We did not inside the whole shop. I think it's wrong. We took samples to confirm it's nicotine. And nicotine, then they actually can be sort of charged because it's a poison act. See,
Dr. Hilmi, there's also the nicotine e-juice and the non-nicotine e-juice. How do you make that differentiation?
the only real way is to take it to the lab and see what's inside. If I may come back to the comment earlier, I'm just thinking it's the first time ever I've heard someone complain about efficiency within the public sector, because it's usually the other way around, and this guy is unfortunately...
It's good, isn't it? I'm like, thank you for saying that.
And the other thing to point out is, it wasn't really KKM going against Cabinet's directive, because the KKM was using current legislation. The only, I suppose, complaint you can make, if you want to, I don't know if you agree with me, Dato, is it should have been done earlier rather than at that point in time. Mm-hmm. But it's using existing laws. So it's actually going with what MOVE says about regulation. And if we're going to regulate things, then we should do it properly and we should enforce it properly. There's no point having a law if we're not enforcing it. Mm-hmm. If I may come back to an earlier point as well, because we mentioned a couple of times about things like pharmacists selling nicotine. And earlier on in your introduction, you talked about how e-cigarettes are 95% safer than tobacco. I think we should actually take a step back and also be wary of the studies that we're looking at. We need to be very aware that we need to approach these studies very critically. So, for example, the study that you sort of mentioned with regards to 95% safer, it was a report brought out by Public Health England, which is, you know, an authority figure. But if you analyze the data and if you analyze the way they came to that decision, it was essentially through expert opinion. So essentially, a few guys sat down, two or three of them said, actually, this is 95% safer. Let's just put this out there and see what happens. Not backed by any proper scientific data. If we look at proper scientific data, there are literally only two studies in the world at this point in time that have been published to say that e-cigarettes are as good as conventional nicotine replacement therapy. Not better, about the same in terms of efficacy. So this whole argument is on the premise that electronic cigarettes are safer as an alternative to smoking, for smoking cessation. But we don't actually have that evidence yet. So we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves in many ways. And as Dr. pointed out, it's because there's so many other variables as well involved in this discussion. It's not just the scientific health issue, which us as doctors, as members of the medical professional, as KKM are worried about. There are all these other issues that we need to address as well.
And hence the reason why I say, why not go down the road of regulation rather than banning? Because in a way you would be depriving a smoking cessation method for those who indeed want to quit smoking.
No, that's my point. We don't have any evidence that this is an actual
better alternative.
We need studies for that. And to be honest with you, if you come to me in, say, 5 years' time and say, this X type of electronic cigarette is definitely helpful with minimum side effects, I would by all means support the introduction of that within a medical context, because that would be to help smokers quit. But as we were talking about earlier on, a major concern is also about non-smokers picking this up. We have a generation of children who have never been exposed to tobacco products in terms of adverts. And what we see today is we have thousands of children. And if I can bring back a study as well in the United States, children between the age of 12 to 17, about 80% of them have been exposed to electronic cigarette adverts at least 13 times over a period of a year. So those who have not previously been involved, have not been influenced by tobacco-like marketing, and I'm talking about celebrity endorsements, about sexualization of imagery, I'm talking about colors, branding, all this is now coming into play. As Dr. Raza pointed out, we're basically seeing history repeat itself, and that is a major concern for all of us.
And to make matters, or confuse things even more, the Sultan of Johor now has made a stand by January 1st, 2016. The state of Johor is going to ban e-cigarettes. Now, I know, Dr. Raza, we were fortunate enough and you had a chat with the Sultan himself.
Yes.
And what was the outcome of that?
I had a chance to meet the Sultan yesterday morning.
Yep.
And it was a real honor for me to meet him as a KKM representative. So two of us went there from the KKM. Me and Dr. Lokman, Deputy Director General for Health. So we both went there as KKM representative with the Director of Health in Johor. And we had an audience with the Sultan of Johor, And it was a very good meeting. The Sultan was very straightforward. His Highness was very straightforward, saying that this is a very bad trend for people to pick up. And he's worrying that young people are doing these things as a trend. And it is not a practice by Malaysians. That's what he said. Ini bukan cara hidup orang Malaysia. And that's a very good point. So it's getting into a trend right now. So he's worrying that what they say is the Bangsa Johor. The Jordanians are called Bangsa Johor. Very interesting. I learned something new yesterday. they are not called Orang Johor. They're called Bangsa Johor. Okay. And the Bangsa Johor should be protected by this new influence. That's what His Highness actually wanted to make a point, saying that this should not be our trend.
But on a federal level, can states implement their own rules like this?
I think it's very interesting, Mira, you asked me this thing. I think Hindi, you agree with me. United States got 50 states. And every state in the USA got their own regulation for tobacco, interestingly. And so was Hisha. Again, their own state will have their own regulations. They may come with their own laws. So there's nothing like overall the whole of USA will actually follow a kind of law for tobacco. So similarly, same thing may happen. But if you ask me, it's a good thing that we can put the ruling for the whole country, if you ask me, not individually by state.
So we don't have individual laws on tobacco by state.
No.
Ours is still regulated on a federal level.
Yes, true.
Well, at this point, you know, Dato' Razak, what I'm asking you is, it's working to your advantage, i.e. Yeah. The MOH wants it banned. The Sultan of Johor has agreed to ban. If a decision like that was made against the Ministry of Health, then how would you manage this?
Well, that's, I think I would answer that.
That's the easiest thing to say.
I might be bad to enter Johor.
I'm just thinking, in terms of, like you say, legislation, so as long as it's something that's within the remit of local authority and does not go against the federal constitution, then there's no real reason why that cannot be implemented. And if you look carefully at what His Highness said, it wasn't him imposing authority in the sense that he's not behaving as an absolute monarch. He's still within his rights as a constitutional monarch with regards to voicing an opinion with an issue that he feels is of concern to his people, to his Bangsa Johor. Similarly, one should then ask, like you say, you know, what if this is applicable across the nation? Should we get all the sultans coming into play? I don't think it's about that. I think it's about the fact that we have a very controversial issue, which we have various opinions from various sectors of government, and a sultan who, once again, we know are very reticent. They're very careful about when they get involved, what they say, because they don't want to cross any boundaries. But the fact that he has voiced an opinion tells us that he is concerned from a healthcare perspective. And we're all here from a healthcare perspective. We're not here to think about or discuss about businesses or who gets what in terms of profits. We are concerned about the health of the nation. And I think, and once again, I'm assuming, but I'm sure that's where His Highness is coming from as well.
Definitely. The thing is, he was very concerned because he see lots of news in the paper lately and in the Facebook and all the mass media. And that actually concerned him very badly. And he had a big discussion with the State Health Director before actually he came to these terms. So it was a sort of an agreement with the director, I mean, KKM, state level, and also His Highness. Concerned with the Jordanians.
To a very large extent, he has been very progressive in his views.
Oh, yes, correct.
Not just in vaping, but in a lot of other issues
as
well.
True.
You know, there is another clip from Samsul Kamal Arifin, president of MOVE. Do you think the Ministry of Health is engaging enough with the vapers?
We would love to sit down with the Ministry of Health because there are a lot of things that we can actually share with them. Because what I said earlier on, we are in a very unique situation where the end user knows about the subject matter in more detail than the regulator. So I guess it's best if only MOH would open doors and would want to listen to what we have to say. We're not saying that we know how to regulate this, or we know how to regulate this better than them. But it's best that if we can have a meeting point, at least have a dialogue, so that they know what's going on our side, and you know they know what's going on. We know what's going on their side, but this is not happening at all. MOH have not reached out to us at all for a dialogue. We have reached out to them many times.
Your thoughts, Dr. Razak?
Yeah, I don't remember they actually having a dialogue with us. No, and they want to have dialogue with us. I'm not so sure about that, but I think I agree with him in the sense that they want to tell us their point of view. And I remember meeting some of them just over tea and coffee, this and that. And they do have their points. They do have points. They said that the trouble, Mira, is that they only have the points only for their people who are close to them. They say that they are actually controlling their the nicotine level. They are controlling the sale to people of more than 18 years of age. And they are regulating the doses very carefully and device carefully. Very true. But probably there are many people selling these vape juice and also the devices out of their control. That's the biggest worry. That's the biggest worry we actually face in Malaysia.
There's a lot you can buy online.
A lot you can buy online.
Yeah.
And they are all making this concoction in their house or back door and everything. This is out of their control. That's what's worrying us. They are maybe good. They maybe are controlling their sale and everything. Very nice. I think I appreciate them. But what about the others? So that's actually worrying us here, Amira.
You are now regulating vaping. There's a draft being drawn up, am I correct?
Yes, yeah, true.
Okay,
yeah.
And how long do you think this draft will take before it actually
the thing
comes
is
to effect?
It's a long process. It's a long process. Anything new in Malaysia, we have to go through lots of series of red tape, and you may have to go to cabinet to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
So it may take 1 to 2 years sometimes. And 1 to 2 years is a long time for us to wait for the thing to be taken. And like I said earlier, there may be more vapors in the future then.
Yep, 1 million in a span
yes.
of almost one year.
Yes, true.
You're going to double that next
exactly.
year.
Exactly, yes,
maybe
true.
Maybe even more.
Yeah, sure.
So where do you see all of this going? What's happening to the country's vaping industry now?
No, if you ask me, the thing is, we are making a lot of noise in the media not to sort of to attack the vapors, but to educate the people. KKM is rolling a one step. I mean, there's only one aim for all these things, educate the people, saying that vaping is a dangerous thing to be done and it's going to be a trend if there's no control. And we don't want people to be addicted to the nicotine like a cigarette. We want people to be aware. That's the main thing. Of course, there may be some rule for people who are smokers to quit, but the thing is that we don't want people to pick up this trend and then go on with another disease. In the future, it'll be difficult to control.
Dr. Helmy, your takeaway?
Very similar thoughts in that it is not about being antagonistic towards vapors. We are really wanting the same goal, that is to help smokers quit. And at the end of the day, the main enemy is still tobacco. It's just a question of how do we approach this problem that we have with tobacco and the safest and most effective way of doing so, because we don't want to make the mistake of what we did with tobacco. You know, that's the saying about how the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And similarly, we don't want to make the same mistakes that we made in the past, only to find ourselves 30, 40 years down the line that we have a whole new generation of individuals with lung diseases and God knows what else.
Thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Dr. Abdul Razak Abdul Muttalif, who is a chest physician at the Institute of Respiratory Medicine, Ministry of Health, an advisor and chairman for the e-cigarette and shisha, Ministry of Health, and Dr. Helmy Haji Maidin, a respiratory consultant, as well as the Malaysian Thoracic Society Council Rep for Tobacco Control, talking to us about vaping on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.